So, is all fair in love and intelligence? Hi, this is Phil Gursky, President and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting in Russell, Ontario, Canada. You're listening to Quick Hits, short podcasts about national security. Came across a really interesting article in The Guardian, of all places, recently. Not normally a news site I would associate with information on national security and intelligence, but it says entitled The Godfather, Saudi Style, Inside the Palace Coup That Brought MBS to Power. I'll put a link to it in the podcast notes. This is essentially a story as to how MBS, or Mohammed bin Salman, went from crown prince to now prime minister and his ascent to power, how he ousted other members of the royal family and has essentially become, essentially the king in waiting of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And some of the backroom dealings, some of the shenanigans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. MBS, of course, is also known for some other things, such as the brutal killing and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, who was a critic of the Saudi regime. He was killed by Saudi agents sent at the behest of MBS a couple of years ago in Turkey. And this has sort of made his name a bit of a pariah, I think, in terms of U.S. relations, because Khashoggi was also either an American citizen or American resident. I'm not sure exactly which one. And the fact that he was killed really, really pissed off the Americans. And it led to perhaps one of the greatest crises in American-Saudi relations, which, as you probably know, are very important. Go way, way back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt's famous meeting to discuss about oil and things like that in the 1950s, 1940s. There's another more issue here that needs to be discussed, and that is what role, if any, should Saudi Arabia have in the wider counterterrorism intelligence alliance, meaning the sharing of information amongst intelligence services around the world. Saudi Arabia is, of course, very highly placed, very well placed to gather intelligence on Islamist extremism, notwithstanding the fact that Saudi Arabia is also the source of much of Islamist extremism thought through its Wahhabist ideology. That's a whole other issue. And there's no question that in my career working in intelligence, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, for example, we dealt with the Saudis. That's not a state secret. I was in Riyadh several times meeting with my Saudi counterparts. And it raises the question as to what do you do in a situation where you have a state that takes part in a assassination, let's call it what it was, of a dissident. MBS, of course, also stands for Mr. Bonesaw, because that's what they used to dismember Mr. Khashoggi in Istanbul. And for those who forget a podcast I did with an old buddy of mine, Al Tredenick, a couple months ago, in October 2018, he sent what's called a Tiger Squad, which was a team of Saudi-sponsored hitmen to kill Dr. Al-Jabri, who is a senior intelligence official, someone that I know, not well, but I've met him a few times, and now living in Canada. And a couple of years ago, the Saudis tried to hit him too, tried to kill him. But luckily, they were denied entry by Canadian authorities. So some intel or some information had been sent up the line to make sure they didn't come in the country and basically do the same thing to Dr. Al-Jabri what they did to Jamal Khashoggi. Can we ignore? Can we set aside? Can we make the Saudis outside the gate when it comes to sharing intelligence on terrorist threats? I want to cite an old CSIS official many, many years ago with whom I worked, maybe worked for is a better description. Just going to call him Jack. And he made the infamous line, and I quote, "Sometimes you take the ugly girl to the dance." Now, some think that's a sexist. What it basically means is that in the world of intelligence, you sometimes have to work with partners, other countries, other agencies that don't quite meet your standard or your test when it comes to things like systems of governance, culture, some would say human rights standards, et cetera, et cetera. If, in fact, the Saudi regime, which will fall to MBS at some point, is one of those countries that do not abide by human rights standards. You know, of course, that public executions are still rampant in Saudi Arabia. There are a lot of crackdowns. There's suggestions that Saudi is using torture against dissidents within the kingdom. There's still very important questions about how much Saudi is spreading aberrant interpretations of Islam around the world. Indonesia in particular has a huge problem with the so-called pesantrens, which are Islamic schools, which many of which are Wahhabi in nature. And Wahhabi Islam does lead to radicalization and on occasions to actual terrorism, violent extremism. What to do with Saudi Arabia then? Are they that important? Should we have a policy in place where we do not deal with regimes that assassinate their dissidents, engage in torture on their soil, break human rights regulations around the world? It's a good question. We had the same problem with Syria several years back. Allegations that Canada had sent its spies to Syria to interrogate some people with Canadian residents who were involved with terrorism. There was a huge lawsuit that was launched years later by those individuals. And I guess in a perfect world, you would say, well, you're only going to talk to your friends. You're only going to talk to those nations that share the same standards that you do, the same cultures, maybe in some ways the same history. And if that's the case, then we here in Canada would be limited in terms of our intelligence exchanges to probably the Five Eyes, although I'll get back to that in a second. So the Anglo club of ourselves, the Australians, the New Zealanders, the Americans, and the Brits, as well as most Western European services, I would argue, obviously the Scandinavian services, which do great work, the Dutch. I have a real high view of the Netherlands intelligence services, the Spanish, the French, the Germans, etc. I would extend that maybe to the Singaporeans, etc. But then what do you do about Pakistan? What do you do about China? If there are, in fact, any exchanges with Chinese intelligence, I have no idea. What do you do about Russia? At one point, I did talk to the Russians on counterterrorism because they had issues with terrorism in some of the Central Asian republics and parts of southern Russia. Can we simply decide that we're not going to talk to these people? That their records on a variety of issues don't rise up to what they should be, and as a consequence, we're going to pretend they don't exist. Well, if that's the case, we'd have to call into question our relationship with the Americans. Because, of course, the CIA is known to have engaged in assassination of people abroad historically. Do they still do it? I don't know. We hear about drone strikes all the time where terrorists are taken out. People like Amal Awlaki back in 2011, American citizen, who was killed in a U.S. drone strike. These are clearly extrajudicial killings. There's no trial, there's no evidence, there's no defense. These people are simply wiped off the face of the earth because they are believed to be, and most probably are, linked to terrorist groups. So do we stop talking to the Americans then because of this? Well, if we did, we'd be cutting off our nose to spite our face because we get an awful lot more intelligence from the Americans than we give to them. And Canadian officials would be in a heap of hurt if we didn't have that flow of intelligence coming from our U.S. allies. I don't know what to do about this. I'm not a fan of Saudi Arabia. I'm not a fan of MBS. I'm not a fan of where he's taking the regime. At the same time, I recognize that the Saudis do have important intelligence collection programs. They do have access to some very important information, even if they are talking out of both sides of their mouth, being Wahhabis on the one hand, and at the same time trying to crack down on Islamist terrorism, some of which is linked to Wahhabi thinking. The bottom line on this, I think, folks, is that this is really complicated. You know, to channel my inner Hogwarts nerd, it's what the goblin says to Harry Potter in the second last film about how he got the sword of Gryffindor. It's complicated. This is complicated stuff. And if you want the best information possible to help you make the best decisions, you have to deal with entities, with agencies that do things differently than you do. I don't think there's an easy resolution to any of this. In a perfect world, as I said, we would just deal with like-minded people, like-minded organizations, like-minded nations. The world's not a perfect place. And if it turned out that we decided to not talk to country X, and country X had information that could have been used to prevent a massive terrorist attack from happening in Toronto or Vancouver or Montreal, how would Canadians feel about that? I don't know. It's a good question, right? Bottom line is that when you're looking at intelligence sharing relationships globally, it's very complex. There are a lot of moving parts. And you're constantly revising it and re-examining it to try to make it as best as it can, to try to ensure that you're not involved in human rights violations or things that go against your own culture and your own legal standards and your own moral standards. But I fear we're never going to get to a point where it works perfectly all the time. Mistakes will be made, decisions that will be made that might lead to some unfortunate results. That's the nature of intelligence. You're dealing with in an industry, if I can use that term, that is involved in bad things, be it terrorism, be it espionage, be it biological and chemical weapons, be it organized crime, be it drug gangs, be it whatever. This is the shadier side of human nature. And thank God we have intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies to deal with it, so the average citizen doesn't have to. I just would caution people, these sort of armchair quarterbacks out there who are quick to comment on, well, CSIS should not have done this, or the RCMP should have done that, to keep your comments to yourself. Because if you haven't spent years at the coalface, like myself and my colleagues have, you really have no idea what you're talking about. So the so-called national security experts, keep your peace. Thank you very much. And allow those of us that have actually worked in the business, in many cases for decades, to weigh in on the pluses and minuses, the advantages and disadvantages of dealing with very, very nasty situations. Anyhow, that's what I think. I'm curious what your views are. You can reach me on email, borealisrisk@gmail.com, or on Twitter @BorealisSaves. You can also find me on LinkedIn and on Facebook. If you like this content, want more, go to my website, borealisthreatandrisk.com, hit the subscribe button. You get all my content free of charge, podcasts and blogs, longer Canadian Intelligence Day conversations with people that worked in national security. You'd also find a link there to my latest book, The Peaceable Kingdom, A History of Terrorism in Canada from Confederation to the Present. It's available on the website or on Amazon Kindle. Love to hear what you thought about my podcast today, what you think about dealing with the Saudis, as well as ideas for future podcasts. We'll talk again soon. Until then, take care.